motivations and the results, and then I go through details. Okay, so we know that the Lorentz transformation has been tested to very high energies in the matter sector. And when we combine Lorentz invariance with local quantum field theory, we get a very powerful framework in physics, like a standard model. So the idea in this work is to focus only on Lorentz invariant in the context of field theory and specifically give up locality and study non-local evolution, but a specific type of evolution, which I call them causal Lorentzian non-local evolution. And the hope is to search for new phenomena or possibly constrain the non-locality scale. The non-locality here the source of non-locality can be fundamental or it's just the effective description. It doesn't matter in this work. I should mention that this work was inspired by causal set because when you consider the evolution of a scalar field on causal set and you take the continuum limit, you get the equation of motion is of this type. It's a causal Lorentzian and non-local evolution. And just a quick note that although I'm talking the causal set session, it's field theory in continuum flat space time with this signature. I'm just changing the evolution law, the equation of motion of the field. So here is a summary of the results. So for the purpose of this talk, I'm just focusing on a massless scalar field, and I'm changing the equation of motion of a massless scalar field. This can also be extended to massive scalar field. The first result is when you do that, you get a continuum of particles. In the local quantum field theory, you only have massless particles as physical states of your theory in the quantum theory. But once you add this Lorentzian non-locality, causal Lorentzian non-locality, in addition to the massless particles, you get particles for any time-like momenta and positive energy, which I call them offshell particles. It's just the name for these, for momenta, for time-like momenta and positive energy. So in a way, you're having a bigger Hilbert space. The second result is for example, if you want to calculate the scattering amplitudes, you get Feynman diagrams, Feynman rules. You're just modifying the Feynman propagator and the amplitudes assigned to external legs. So it's not a dramatic exchange. And the last one, the most important, and I think it's the most counterintuitive result, is that the cross-section of a scattering of particles is non-zero if and only if all of them are unshell. If you scatter a mixture of unshell particles and offshell particles, the cross-section is zero. So in a sense, there is no way of detecting these particles through a scattering experiments. So here is the outline of my talk. I already covered the first part. Now I'm going to mention what exactly I mean by causal Lorentzian evolution. Then I briefly mentioned the method of quantization, and I end by some remarks. A massless scalar field, massless scalar field satisfies Klein-Gordon equation on top, with J is just a source term. So the idea is to replace D'Alembertian with a new operator box tilde, which satisfies these conditions. Box tilde is a linear operator. It's real, which means that box tilde acts on a real function, gives a real function. The notion of Lorentz invariance is in this condition. It's a Poincaré invariant operator, which means that if you have a scalar field, you do Poincaré transformation and acts by box tilde is the same as first acting by box tilde and then do the Poincaré transformation. The condition four is the reflection of the fact that we know that local quantum field theory works very well at low energies. So we want box tilde to approximate D'Alembertian at low energies. It just modifies at high energies. Condition five is that this equation of motion, I want to describe a stable evolution, no exponentially growing modes. And the last one, which is very important, the causal one, which means that the equation of motion is retarded, which means that if you want to know the value of box tilde acting on phi at point x, you only need the value of phi inside the causal past of point x. So this is the notion of causality or retardedness. So if you combine these conditions, you get a number of results for this operator. It's translation invariant, so plane waves are eigenfunctions of this operator, where b of p here is the eigenvalue. It's Lorentz invariant, so b of p can only depend on Lorentz invariant quantities, which are p squared and sine of p naught. And the reality condition gives you this. So if you change the sine of p naught, it's the same as complex conjugating b. So this condition means that if momentum p is a space-like, then b of p is the same as bsr. So b is real for a space-like momenta. And for time-like momenta, it can be complex. But if you change the sine of p naught, it's the same as changing the sine of the imaginary part. The condition four means that the eigenvalues of box tilde b for a small p approaches the eigenvalues of D'Alembertian. For a small p or a small p squared, b approaches minus p squared. And the last two conditions, stability and causality, imposes a condition on the analytic structure of this function. So if I continue b to the complex, analytically continue b to the complex plane of p naught, it has this analytic structure. For time-like momenta, there will be a cut. And the value of the function on the real line corresponds to the value when you approach the cut from above. So for example, this integral, which is the inverse of box tilde, this integral corresponds to integration over this contour above the cut. This comes from the causality condition or retardedness condition, which means that this integral is the retarded Green's function. So the inverse of this operator, the operator is retarded, so its inverse is also retarded Green's function. Now move on to the quantization. The idea is to find the quantum theory which in classical limit gives us the classical equation of motion, this equation of motion. So we don't have Hamiltonian or action, we just have equation of motion. And I know two methods of quantization that is useful in this case. The first one is the Sorkin-Johnson quantization. It's very useful because it only needs the information about the retarded Green's function. So once you know the retarded Green's function, it gives you two-point function, field operator, and vacuum state. So you have the free theory. And the second method is double path integral, also known as Schrunger-Keldysh or in-informalism. It's also very useful because in the double path integral formalism, naturally, the classical equation of motion will be retarded equation. For example, Feynman path integral doesn't work because the equation of motion you get from the Feynman path integral, it's symmetric in time. It's not a retarded equation of motion. So you can quantize, so you can come up with a quantum theory using both methods. They gave the same result under one assumption, which is not very important. So here is the two-point function you get. And W tilde is given in terms of the eigenvalues of box tilde B. B of P. Specifically, W tilde is non-zero if and only if momentum P is time-like or null, and P naught is positive. So it means that in the field expansion, there are two sets of modes, where the ones where P is null or massless modes, massless particles, which I call them unshell, and the ones that P is time-like with positive energy, which I call them off-shell. So it means that there is a continuum of massive particles when you have this sort of non-locality. So W tilde has this form. It has a delta function at P squared equals zero for null, for massless modes, and has a finite term for time-like momenta. And this term originates from the pole of the, if I go back to this picture, the delta function originates from the pole of the Green's function, and the finite term comes from the fact that there is a cut. So if there were no cuts, there were this term wouldn't be here. Okay, so once you quantize the theory, you have a free Hamiltonian. You can add interaction and find the scattering amplitude perturbatively. You get Feynman rules, Feynman diagrams, just with the modification of Feynman propagators and amplitude for the external legs. Just a quick note, the Feynman propagator is not really a Green's function in this case. So here I mentioned one example in lambda phi cubed to see that everything is okay. So the scattering amplitude, so first, because we have the Hilbert space is consists of four momenta particles, not three momenta, unlike the local quantum field theory. And you have amplitudes coming from the external legs. You have the Feynman propagator and the conservation of energy momentum tensor. Okay, so you can find the scattering amplitudes of everything. In these examples, we consider the resulting theory is unitary. Although you have many more states in your Hilbert space, the theory is unitary, and the total cross section of scatterings are finite. So you don't. So the, basically, the quantization method gives you a time order two-point function.
Do you have an ISM? Can you derive these things from the field theory?
The final.
So, because you know, usually you have a theta zero, but then you can write that as an ISM prescription, which then means that it comes from a positive.
So here.
No, to the next slide.
Yeah, so the Feynman propagator corresponds to this contour. So here you go below the cut, and here you go above.
So can you go next slide? Can you write it in terms of I epsilon description?
No.
So you don't have.
Sorry?
You don't have an action principle. Of,
you know, so there is not pathing theorem. There is a double path.
It's a double path theorem. There is no action.
The double path theorem doesn't mean Feynman.
No.
I mean, you want something that, like, you know, if you take BP to be just P squared, whatever equalization, it should give back the usual.
It does, because if you take BP to be P squared, there's no cut here. So one, I mean, that the Feynman-Green's functions, so here you go below the cut, and here you go above the cut. So when there is no cut, it's like the same as the I epsilon prescription. Because you go here below this pole, and here you go above the pole. So in a sense, if you send the non-locality scale to infinity, you recover the result of the local quantum field theory. It gives you gives you the same result.
It's not a
Green's function. It's not.
So it's really modifying quantum mechanics. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not really quantum mechanics.
So it's not. No. Or should I think about that then? And, if I don't have a positive formulation?
But that's the only thing you care about is expectation values, which comes from I guess the idea is that you'll have predictions for expectation values, but you can't have, you don't have predictions for states, wave functions.
You're losing finite elements.
There is no five-man path integral formulation, if you want to consider the, this type of evolution.
But how does the step, and maybe we should put some of this up to the discussion. Schwinger-Keldysh is a completely standard way of dealing with field theory, used in thermal field theory all the time.
No, in thermal field theory, yes. But...
Or one for open systems.
Yeah, because here the operator has the notion of time in it. It cares about future and past. So the Schwinger-Keldysh is the problem. If you consider the this action, the Feynman path integral. That's why I'm saying the Feynman path integral is not. So this action, for example, phi box tilde phi, 1/2. Then if you vary this action with respect to phi, the equation of motion you get is 1/2, but not minus j phi here. The equation of motion you get is 1/2 box tilde plus box tilde transpose phi equals j. So it's not a retarded, so this whole combination is not a retarded operator. It's time symmetric. So you can't get a retarded equation of motion from Feynman path integral. That's a very good question. I'm still confused about it because, for example, if you look at the scattering amplitude, it doesn't violate time reversal. But it seems that at the level of... Yeah, so that's why I'm... That's something that I'm thinking a little about it. As the theory is unitary, the cross section is finite. The existence of this continuum of massive particles is because of this notion of retardedness in the equation of motion. So if the equation of motion wasn't retarded, we didn't get this massive, the continuum of particles. Compared to other works implementing non-locality, this work is different in the sense that we implement non-locality in the kinetic term rather than the interaction. So we're changing the kinetic term, basically. As I mentioned at the beginning, the cross-section of two-particle scattering is zero even if one of them is off-shell. So it means that there is no way of detecting these off-shell modes through a scattering, and we thought that it makes them a good candidate to be considered as dark matter. They interact with other particles. I mean, you have a classical equation of motion, so it means that the coherent state interacts with other fields. But but the cross section is zero. So I don't have a very good intuition why how that can happen. But you cannot detect them through scatterings. And the last three points are more for the future work. In a concrete model, if you take this proposal seriously, that maybe these off-shell modes are responsible for dark matter particles. The non-locality scale can be constrained or predicted using the abundance of dark matter because it appears, it basically sets the probability of producing these off-shell particles. So the abundance of dark matter can fix the non-locality scale. The extension to massive scalar field has been done, but to other fields, not yet. And I mean, at this stage, I can say in the general form, there are two predictions for this theory. There will be no detection, no direct detection of dark matter. And the second is that in a scattering experiment, there will be a missing energy, which goes in this form, that if you scatter two unshelled particles, there is a chance that you don't get anything. I mean, you get off-shell particles, but you don't detect them. And the probability goes as the energy over the non-locality scale to the power of 2n, or n.
So the time reversal that cannot happen? I thought you said that off-shell particles don't scatter.
They don't scatter. The scattering amplitude is the same. If I go back here, the scatter, so if I just interchange here, the scattering amplitude is the same. But when you calculate the cross-section, is not the same. The cross-section of off-shell particles scattering is zero.
Okay, but it sounds like that the time reverse of that statement is not true, because you just said you could annihilate on-shell particles to off-shell particles.
Yes.
So that cross-section is non-zero.
That cross-section is non-zero. I think the time reversal is a condition on the scattering amplitude, not on the cross section. I mean, physically, you said it makes sense, yes. There are two notions of violating time symmetry. In physical sense, I agree that it violates. But at the level of the scattering amplitude, it doesn't. You don't see that this, because, you don't see it at the level of a scattering amplitude. I think, yeah, thank you.
Lots of questions, but we are already 2 minutes ahead of time. Maybe there can be topics for the discussion, which starts now, so.
there's my kind of discussion, let's ask the questions.
Okay.
Laurent, you want to?
Yeah, I'm just confused about your notion of causality, which differ from the usual, from Feynman notion of causality. I mean, here you're causing, maybe it's my own,
So here, by causality, I mean the retardedness.
Yes, but Feynman told us that, but that's not the way we do it. We have retardedness for particles and advancedness for antiparticles. And that's how we deal with causality. So we know the usual field theory that,
I don't mean causality as opposed to acausality. Causality here means exactly retardedness. The equation of motion is retarded.
Well, you could say causality means Feynman,
You're not saying that something made of antiparticles will have the opposite direction of time.
No, but I'm not saying that. But I mean, here you want to have a propagator which is somehow always retarded, but that's not what we have in usual theory. It's not even the usual definition of causality. This is the naive. Because it makes a difference, for instance, if you look at the self energy. If you compute only through retarded propagation, you don't get the right results. But at some point, this was somehow what people tried before Feynman, right? To have a propagation only. Because of retarded propagator, and Feynman came up with something different. Which respect the time symmetry.
You've done a real scalar field, but for real scalar field particles and antiparticles are identical. Maybe you discover that you also violate charge conjugation.
Oh, maybe. I haven't.
And that would be my guess. My guess is you maximally violate charge conjugation and finalism. Well, the dark matter is a shot in the dark. The continuum of particles starts at the inverse non-locality scale.
The continuum. It's a continuum. You have
starts,
all the masses.
The point where there is a mass where the cut starts.
The mass starts at zero to infinity. You have all the masses.
That was because the finite momentum.
That was
Yeah.
That's oh, it's a special one.
It's a special one. So you have all the masses.
You have
all
so
the masses.
So the plasticity with the spectrum.
Why?
You can't see them in close.
Okay.
Well, I guess your question is about unitarity then. Yes. You can rephrase that. What about unitarity?
I mean, without, at this stage, it's unitary. I mean, if you don't
no,
consider
if I,
loops.
No, is it, if I had a quantum field theory where I had a continuum of mass,
yeah, you choose here for that.
Yes.
Then I would get infinite, I would get extra infinity summing and consider one loop diagram. I would have a standard one loop diagram, and then I would have to integrate over the masses. Maybe I don't get divergence, but I get two wildly different masses.
I think you get, so here the Feynman propagator is different. So if you do the loop calculations, you get a different answer.
But not, so I have this thing all the time that below this inverse dynamical highly scale, you have conventional. Do you have unconventional physics for all energy scales? Or let me ask you this. In the estimate that you have a problem with nothing coming out of interactions, scaling by the center of mass and the over the non-locality scale. The non-locality scale doesn't come into the propagator.
Non-locality scale appears in the propagator. But
where is it in this
So for example, Feynman propagator, it's one over, it has this form. So the non-locality scale is, it's in the B, basically.
Just a question, but if you write it in the Higgs space, is it a time order of something?
Yes, it's a time, it's exactly time order two-point function. That's how I get this.
And there's a question.
Questions. Did you say you do know how to handle loop amplitudes? Or you don't?
I don't. I mean, I haven't looked at them.
So I think it's premature to say anything about unitarity until you know how to talk about loop diagrams.
Agreed.
And the other comment or question actually is, do you know how to formulate this in a curved space-time background?
The curved space-time, this operator box tilde, in fact, integrate over the causal path of point X. So it has basically, you can have a real space, you can find in the real space. So box tilde of phi is something like a of phi, and integral over the causal path of x. We'll call it 2, 4, 1. Yes, yes, it can be done.
So when you think about these extra particles as dark matter candidates,
mm-hmm.
are you evaluating their contribution to the Einstein equation by varying the metric mm-hmm. dependence I guess you don't have an action. So how are you deciding how they couple to gravity?
So it's a very naive way. It's just there are massive particles, so they contribute. So like massive particles, massive point particles.
Right, but if we don't have an action, then we really don't know how to write down their mm-hmm. contribution to the Einstein equation.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know, you don't need a time order. If it's a time order, there is an action. It's an Hamiltonian formulation. So you told me it is a time order. If
it's
then you have an action.
No. Why?
Well, that's all you need to write down. Time order means that your expectation value comes from exponential TD, you know, phase space Hamiltonian. And so if it means time order, then it's...
No, the double path integral, for example, can give you the time order two-point function. You can get it from the time from double path integral.
The time order just means that you put your state and you evolve with h, and you put your state, you evolve with h, and then when you do that consistently, you have the path integral formulation. If you, no?
Maybe I
don't know.
I mean, time order is just a prescription of how where you put the operator.
Yes,
you have the operators, then you have
the time order. So here you have a Hamiltonian, but the Hamiltonian it's not local in terms of field. It's non-local That's fixed. It's a fixed it, but you cannot express it in terms of the field in the Hamiltonian. You cannot express it in terms of fields locally.
So you don't have a Hamiltonian formulation.
You have non-local Hamiltonian.
Non-local in time.
I think yeah, it's non-local in time.
So you don't well, you don't have them.
It's non-local.
Two questions here. Alex, a couple of things.